Call the Regulated Industries Committee to order. Representative Emmers moves the minute approval of the minutes of April 4th. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. First, we'll bring up House File.
I'm here.
Oh. Representative Hackbarth, House File 519. Let's bring that up first.
I'm here, Mr. Chair. I would move House File 519 to recommend it pass and be placed on the general register.
Representative Hackbarth moves House File 519 to recommend it pass and sent to the general register.
Chair, I do have an amendment to pass out.
Okay. We'll get that passed out.
Okay. I'll explain the bill in the meantime.
Why don't you do that?
Mr. Chairman, members, this is the Texas Hold'em Bill. We had this bill before the Gaming Committee and also before this committee when we did House File 1801, the charitable gaming or the lawful gaming bill. So you've heard this before. This passed all the Senate committee is on the Senate floor. That all happened yesterday, so we met all the deadlines over there. And we'd like to move this along separate to our general register.
Okay.
And with that, Mr. Chair, that pretty much is the bill. It's Texas Hold'em, and it just says that it's a social game of skill. And it's not allowed to be, you know, any money involved or anything like that. Just going to put it in the same category as cribbage or scat or sheephead bridge, euchre, you know, pinochle, those kinds of things.
Okay.
And with the amendment, do you want to move the amendment, Mr. Chair?
I can, Representative Hackbarth. Why don't I move the A1 amendment to House File 519? Simply this, the same language we put on the bill that passed out of this committee, just asking that they make accommodations for persons with disabilities, both in the tables and with the either calling the cards or however they make the accommodation for the game at the restaurant or establishment that it's at. So, any questions on the amendment?
No.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Now to House File 519. Any questions on this? As Representative Hackworth said, members, this has already been included in a bill that's sent out of here, but this would just get it to the register on its own as well. That would match up with what the Senate did. Any further questions? Anybody need to testify for or against this? Having none, let's vote on the bill. Representative Hackworth renews his motion to pass House File 519 and send it to the general register. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries.
Thank you,
Representative Hackworth. Representative Beard, let's call your bill up. We're waiting for Representative Knobloch on House File 1214. I know there's several people that are here for that bill. He should be coming shortly. Representative.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I'd like to move House File 2129. To pass this committee and go to the general register. Oh. They do have an author's delay.
We got to modify that. Send it to rules, Representative Beard.
Rule, yes, correct. Rules. I'm sorry, Mr. Chair. That is correct. That's
Mr.
My
Chair.
Motion.
The Representative Beard moves House File 2129.
Now, Mr. Chair, I do have one amendment. Delete all amendment.
Okay.
A05.
Why don't we get that in front of the committee?
Okay.
I think I've got an amendment too, Representative Beard.
Certainly.
If Ms. Long has been able to get that done. Okay. Paige can hand mine out as well. Why don't you tell us what the DE1 amendment does, Representative Beard?
Mr. Chairman, this is language that essentially has been passed in the Racino bill that left here a week ago or so. But we would like it to stand alone on the general register eventually, provided the Rules Committee agrees. The delete all amendment removes the original premise of 2129 that had to deal with telecasting races to other tracks. That's not in here any longer. Instead, it inserts language that lifts the limits to a fixed number on the card club at Canterbury, which has been so hugely beneficial to the horse racing industry. We propose to raise them from 50 table limit to 90. There'd be two tournaments a year instead of one, and that they could be able to last for up to 21 days as opposed to 14. Everything else remains the same. This is still under the purview of the State Racing Commission. So even though we may vote here today to raise to 90, that would not be granted unless it went through the State Racing Commission. But that's the essence of the amendment. It deletes everything in the bill and allows the table limits to go from 50 to 90 if the Racing Commission concurs.
So, Representative Beard, you can either accept that as a friendly author's amendment, or we can vote on it. What's your preference?
Now, Mr. Chair, are you asking about the A1 amendment that was just handed to me?
The DE one.
The DE one.
You can accept both of them, actually, but let's do the DE. Oh, sorry. It's not DE, it's A05.
Correct.
0469. Members, it's in your packets.
It has the effect of being a delete all, but it is actually 805.
Representative Beard, what?
I will accept it, Mr. Chair.
Accept that amendment as a friendly amendment.
Please, yes.
So you basically just told us what the bill did as well. Why don't we move to the A1 amendment? You want to accept that as a friendly? You want to offer it, or should I?
Mr. Chair, give me just another 30 seconds to finish reading it, maybe less.
Okay. The handwritten one, members, that was copied.
Mr. Chair, can I ask a quick question about the A1 amendment?
Yes, Representative Happy.
Technically speaking, when you're talking about Texas Hold'em or 7-card stud, how would this work?
Representative Happy, probably better minds would have to figure that out than...
It's almost always the case with me, Mr. Chair.
You mean that they announce the cards, or...
No, the announcing the cards I can understand, but if you're dealing with... if the dealer is dealing cards to some Braille cards and some non-Braille cards, how do you mix decks? Or do you play with a deck that's all Braille cards?
Well, you might have to play with all Braille cards. Maybe we need to modify the amendment. If they call them, you wouldn't necessarily need Braille cards.
I was just curious to see how... You would need the Braille cards because in these games you're going to have whole cards that you don't want other people to see.
True. Well, that's what they'll have to do.
Mr. Chairman?
Frankly. Representative Beard.
Yes. I really am not a good one to speak to this amendment because I can hardly play Old Maid with my kids. However, I do know enough that if you're going to be playing with Braille and I don't have to be, I want to be playing with you. Perhaps, though, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Sampson, who's joined me here at the table, can speak to Representative Hoppe's question.
Mr. Sampson and then Representative Atkins.
All right, Mr. Chair, thank you. For the record, Randy Sampson from Canterbury Park. To address the question of Representative Hoppe and question, I guess, to the Chair, this is an issue that we have looked into. We do make accommodations. The way that this has worked in our room is if there is an individual that is sight impaired that would like to play, they are allowed to have someone with them who will read their cards and then whisper into their ear. So we have no objection to the, and would consider it a friendly amendment. We currently do make accommodations. The issue that I would like to raise would be the Braille deck, as Representative Hoppe has mentioned. That does create some issues. The Braille decks don't work in shuffling machines, and you don't have the same game protection. All of our cards, there's a very significant process that you go through for game protection and making sure that you have cards that are consistent and decks that are complete. And so Braille cards are more difficult to shuffle. They don't work in the machines, and that would be, we have done research and not found any place where Braille cards actually work in that type of a poker situation. We're willing to work with the chair on what you think is fair, but I at least need to raise that issue that Braille cards can be problematic. We have very specific cards that so that nobody can bring another card into the game, They have to be our cards that have a certain insignia that are manufactured just for us, and that is difficult to do with Braille cards. And again, they don't really shuffle like a regular deck would.
Mr. Sampson, to this issue, and maybe one way to modify it would be just to make reasonable accommodations or requirements. By the way, this has come from is I've talked to people who I know who are visually impaired, and they haven't had the best experience, to be blunt, I guess, at Canterbury Downs with having somebody assist them, the dealers assisting in blackjack or assisting them in reading cards. I think their point was to bring somebody with you is not necessarily a reasonable accommodation that the establishment makes. But so I think that's some of the issue, and maybe it's gotten better. It's been about a year and a half since I heard that comment from a couple people that had been out there. We could look at that, maybe deleting part of the last part of this amendment.
Mr. Chair, I would certainly accept that, and your comments are accurate that we have had issues in the past, and you're accurate that typically our response is if you would like to bring someone, you're welcome to do that, but we don't have somebody on staff to provide. If your bill requires us to make reasonable accommodations, and that means that we will have someone available, we will do that.
I guess that we can leave that up. It seems as someone who goes, it's not. Whenever I've played blackjack, it's not real practical to have somebody standing behind you or expecting whoever you come with to stand there and play for you. So it would be my intention that the reasonable accommodations would mean that the dealer either needs to be trained to announce them when there's somebody playing at the table that's blind, or in Texas Hold'em. And it seems to me not unreasonable that in the size of facility that you are, or casinos are, but we aren't talking casinos, but that there's some employee that could shift to that if the need was there from whatever job they're doing. Maybe it's one of the waitresses, maybe it's somebody that's doing other tasks, but it seems you could cross-train them for that. That would be my intention, and maybe there's other people that have comments on this. Representative Atkins, you had a question on this amendment or on the bill?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Atkins.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My first issue would be, why didn't this visit the gaming division where it belongs?
Representative Beard, as I understand, Representative Westerberg has agreed to let this just come to the full committee. Representative Beard, or?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Beard.
Yes, this actually was passed as part of the Racino bill that did appear before the committee. My apologies to this group for not having it as a standalone bill. I mean, it has been standing on the introduction for a month or so anyhow. But I'm asking this committee to send it to rules. I'll take my chances there. I'm happy to do that. But that's why the Racino bill is an issue unto its own. It seems to be caught up in some other things involving another casino or whatnot. This is a pretty straightforward, simple lift the limits, and we all know who benefits. It goes right into the horse racing industry and, of course, the corporate taxes that this company pays. So that's why it's a standalone bill. Representative Atkins, I'm asking the committee's indulgence to pass up the rules, and I'm happy to take my chances in the rules.
Yeah. Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
I move that and I believe it's a prior motion, I move that it go to the gaming division.
Representative Atkins moves to refer this to the gaming division. Representative Atkins, I'm fine with it coming to our committee. Members of the gaming division are on this committee, and given deadlines, I think it's fine. The gaming division's already looked over this language, so...
Mr. Chair, I will draw that motion. I'll move that it go to the tax committee. There's several revenue components of this. I believe these are taxed items. If you'd like, I can go through it for about an hour or so, but we can probably just shortcut that and ask for a roll call on it.
You're moving to...
Refer to the tax...
Modify the motion.
I withdrew the original motion. I'll move that it go to the tax committee. Do you refer to the
Representative
tax
Atkins withdraws his motion to refer to the gaming division. What you're moving to modify is the original motion that sent it to the general register and rather re-refer it to the tax committee.
Now, the original
motion... We actually sent it to the rules committee, and you're saying send it to the tax committee.
I am, Your Honor.
Your Honor. Representative Atkins, I got to check this out. I'm not sure if it can go to the... Seems to me that rules is the committee that needs to approve the path it goes if moving forward. But
no. And Mr. Chair, I understand it does need to make a step in rules, but before it gets to rules, my motion is that it be referred to the
tax committee. Well,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Hoppe.
I'm on the Rules Committee, and I believe in the past we have had bills go to Rules and be re-referred to other committees if the Rules Committee decides that that should be the case.
I got it.
So if Rules decides that this should go through taxes, if we refer to Rules, in the infinite wisdom of the Rules Committee, we could then send it back to taxes.
Aye. Mr. Chair.
Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I understand that that's a possibility, but I believe it'd be best for the bill to make step in the tax committee first and then go on to the rules committee. So I will not withdraw my motion. I'd ask for a roll call on it, please.
Representative Atkins, I'm not sure that your motion to modify Representative Beard's motion is in higher order than the amendment in front of us right now. And I'd have to look that up. But secondly, Brian says that the rules require it to go to, after deadline, you have to send it to the Rules Committee. And so a tax referral wouldn't be in order. And maybe we need to check the rules to verify that before I make that decision.
Okay, well, then the bill be laid over until next week, maybe next Tuesday or Wednesday. So you have an opportunity. I withdraw that, Mr. Chair. The motion is to re-refer it to the tax committee. It is a higher motion. The rules state that it must make a stop in the rules committee, but it does not state that it needs to go there directly. It just needs to go there in order to, because it's failed the deadline.
Okay. I would need to take some time to find some clarification on that, Representative Atkins. At this point, to amend Representative Beard's motion on where this goes, I don't believe is in order until the amendment gets off the floor. But I stand for correction if you know differently, Representative Atkins. Then we'd come back to your motion, Representative Powell.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It seems to me that right now the business is that we're on the amendment that we were talking about. We have not finished dealing with the amendment. It would seem to me that we need to finish dealing with the amendment prior to taking up Representative Atkins' motion, whatever that motion may be.
That would be my ruling at this point in time.
Mr. Chair, that is the rule. This is Representative Erickson. We just encountered it in education policy the other night. And if there's an amendment on the table, you cannot move a bill to another location while you have the amendment on the table.
Okay. Well, with that reinforcement, I would make that ruling that your amendment at this point is out of order. We can take it up as soon as we deal with this amendment, Representative Atkins.
I apologize, Mr. Chair. It was my understanding that Representative Beard took that as a friendly amendment. But if I'm wrong, I guess we can vote on that as well.
Mr. Chair.
I don't think
I apologize.
Representative Beard, and we're still discussing the amendment. For official record, I'm going to move that A1 amendment have it in front of us. Liz, you want to give us
Mr. Chair, on what is the second line of the handwritten amendment, it should read 2129, not 519.
Okay.
I apologize.
I will incorporate
error and haste.
I will incorporate that in as a friendly amendment to the A1 amendment. Anybody in the audience that wants to testify for or against the amendment? The amendment in front of us simply talks about the reasonable accommodations that must be made. Ms. Long, for the audience who hasn't heard or seen this amendment, could you just read it? Because I know there's some that think it was just written this morning or this afternoon. It would be helpful so they know what we're talking about.
Yes, Mr. Chair. Basically, right on line 18 of the Delete Everything Amendment that was adopted, the AO5469 Amendment, on line 18, after the period, this language would be inserted. The Commission may not approve any plan of operation under Subdivision 6 that does not provide for reasonable accommodations for players with disabilities. Accommodations to the table and the cards shall include, among other things, the announcement of the cards visible to the entire table and the use of Braille cards for players who are blind.
Mr. Chairman.
Our Representative Beard.
I would speak in favor of this amendment.
Actually, Representative Beard, I'm going to just lay this bill over. Temporarily, we can bring it back up. We can still lay it over. I'm going to lay this temporarily over until so we can let Representative Knobloch proceed with his bill. He's got some other commitments, and we can come right back to this, if that's all right, Representative Beard.
Yeah, that's fine, Mr. Chair.
Okay.
Chair Wilson.
Chair will lay the House File 2129 over temporarily. Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Ms. Long, on the Delete Everything Amendment, the 085, the quotation marks that are in line 18, isn't that a technical mistake?
Why don't you talk to her in the meantime? And then Representative Knobloch is here with his bill. He's got some other commitments that are going on, and so... I know there's people here to testify for and against that, or for or against that bill. And so with that, the chair will move House File 1219 be recommended to pass and sent to 1214, correction. Moves House File 1214 and be sent to Ways and Means Committee.
Let's see.
Representative Knobloch, I checked the record and it's...
Check with Representative Gunther.
It's already come from his committee in the committee report that we had. So I didn't get to talk to him directly. I checked the record and that's where it came from before it came here. So the question was whether we send it...
Mr. Chair, we can send it to Ways and Means. I guess I had thought that it had been in Commerce, but that's okay.
Okay,
Mr. Chair. I really apologize to Representative Beard. I'm in the midst of some other meetings upstairs, and I can only stay a short time. I guess let me just briefly talk about House File 1214, Mr. Chairman and members. What it deals with is a blind newspaper service that is in existence right now, and its funding is running out in the near future. And there are several hundred subscribers to it at this time. I have some from my area that are here to testify on it today. And what House File 1214 would do is it would take money from the telephone access fund and basically spend up to $100,000 a biennium to continue this program that basically allows the blind access to various newspapers that are published throughout the state and throughout the country that they otherwise wouldn't necessarily have access to. And, Mr. Chair, I know that there's been some controversy about this in regard to other amendments, and I know that you've been working on those, and I think I would just leave it with that, Mr. Chair. And if you've got some questions, I can certainly answer some now. Otherwise, I'll leave it to you as to how you want to conduct the meeting, but I'm afraid I can't stay for the whole thing as I would like. And I know we'll have more discussion.
Well, Mr. Representative Knobloch, but I'm thinking it would work. We'll have some time next week. I'd like to have the discussion here today, bring up any amendments, and then postpone the vote till next Tuesday when you'd have more time and we can lay it over. If there's things we need to work out between then and now, but now and then, we could sure do that, but try to get it progressed along further than it is right now, if that's all right with you.
That's fine with me, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Question, represent. You said $100,000 per biennium, so it'd be $50,000 a year.
I believe it's about that, Mr. Chair. Yes.
Okay.
I believe that's. I mean, the maximum in the maximum proposed amount was $100,000. I think it's actually, if I remember right, it's $40,000 a year was, I believe, what the actual
cost
was on it. Cost.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Knobloch? Okay. But we'll get to that. Representative Knobloch, we've got some amendments. Maybe we should take some testimony first, but you tell me, are you probably leaving shortly here?
I kind of need to, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Feel free to go ahead. The bill is in front of us, and unless there's anybody that has a question for you, which nobody's raising their hand to ask you questions, feel free to leave whenever you need to.
Okay.
Do you have a testifier list? Why don't we call for any testimony from the audience? Whoever is interested in testifying for or against this bill, please keep in mind we are trying to. We will be laying this over once we bring up some amendments, but we'd like to get the testimony in now. But we really need to try to run this in less than half an hour. And so please keep your comments to the point and try not to repeat somebody else's points too many times. So if there's anybody that wants to testify for or against this, please let the page know, and please come to the testifying table in order.
Yeah, we have a couple of testifiers here, man.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate it, and I'll leave it in your capable hands.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, my name is Judy Sanders, and I am a user of the service that we currently have. I'll be very brief. For the committee, I can describe the service. It offers over 150 papers. It allows us to read any paper we want, any article we want, any time we want, and they are put on the system every day very early. It allows us to figure out how to spell things. We can do research in the system. It is the only sophisticated system like it in this country. And I would caution you about two things and tell you a couple of things. One is we have been very pleased that through every committee that we have seen this, there has been no opposition. So we're very proud of that, and we thank you for that. Also, this amendment, I read that proposed amendment. And as I understand it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, the first part of it says that in the announcement that introduces the system, it must say that state funds are used. It already does say that it's sponsored by State Services for the Blind, and so that, you know, there'd be no problem with that part. But the second part calls for a fee of $6. If you put that amendment on this bill, then we cannot use this system. We are prohibited by the very newspapers that allow us to have it from charging. So it isn't even a philosophical question of whether we should be paying or not. It's not allowed. So if you put that in, it is in effect killing this service. So we would urge you not to do that. I guess that's all I have, and I can answer any questions.
Thank you, thank you, Ms. Sanders.
Not yet.
Any questions? Ms. Sanders, you brought up the subscription fee.
Yes.
Explain that a little further.
Okay.
Right now they charge $6, as I understand it, for dial-in news.
Oh, yes.
Services, but not
Let me explain something to the rest of the committee. There are currently two newspaper services in Minnesota. One of them is free, and it has over 150 papers on it, and the other one is also run by State Services for the Blind. It has three newspapers on it. It is only available in the metro area, and it charges $6 a month. I don't know whether anyone is here from State Services for the Blind, but it is my understanding that what they would propose to do, since the Star Tribune and the St. Paul Pioneer Press are currently on both systems, and that doesn't make sense, is scale down dial-in news to keep the things that cannot be found on Newsline and maybe not charge for either system. And that it would all be covered under this, the relay service tax. Not the, so, you know, the
so
PUC
the TAM
tax.
Fund.
Yes, thank you.
So it's free, Ms. Sanders, if it's free, then why do we need this bill?
Well, it's free to the users, Mr. Chairman. It is not free to run it. Nothing is. It is currently paid for by a one-time grant from the Department of Education through library services. That grant has been stretched much further than anyone thought it could, and my other point is that it will expire on April 15th, and if we have not found other funding by then, then the Newsline service will be cut off to the entire state, and only the metro area and those paying, and there are only about 90 people, paying $6 a month will get dial-in news. That will continue for the 90 people in the metro area.
Okay, any questions for Ms. Sanders? No. No questions.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders.
Thank you.
Next, we'll have Tom Heinel come up. People that are here in the audience. Oh, there's another testifier. I'm sorry. Tom, just stay sitting for now and... before you proceed, if there's anybody else in the audience, and I know there's some that you cannot see, the page, Joe, where are you at, Joe? Jeff. Joe and Jeff.
I'm here, too.
Okay. Right now, raise your hand if you would need or want to testify on this bill for or against, and then one of the pages can come to you and get your name and then bring it up to us. I'm just... You guys look for hands up in the air if there is anybody else that hasn't gotten a hold of you. So we have testifiers. And please proceed.
Mr. Chair, my name is Jennifer Dunham, and I am the Vice President of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. I'm also a user of the dial-in, or excuse me, the newspaper's got a telephone in here in Minnesota. And I would concur with what Judy Sanders has just said. The thing that I would add is the bill that was brought to you, it's the original bill without amendments that are being proposed today, what enjoyed very broad support within the blindness community. Sometimes legislation doesn't always enjoy the kind of support that this one did, but I just want to let you know that the blindness community is very supportive and united about supporting the way that this bill was brought to you today. So I urge you to retain it the way that it was, that it came to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Dunham. Any questions for Ms. Dunham? Seeing none, thank you. Tom Heinel? Mr.
Chair,
Heinel, welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Tom Heinel, a blind Minnesotan, and Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm not here to support or not support the bill. What I'm here to do is try to improve the bill. What I feel in some areas that might be a little bit deficient or need a little bit more explanation. First of all, the matter of what Representative Nagelbach indicated about $50,000 per year, $100,000 biennium. If the NFB's additional grant for the other part of the service is not renewed or they don't have that money in the future, it's my understanding that it will be close to $50,000 a year to run just the NFB Newsline. Now, the Dial-In News is an additional $20,000 a year, so you might look at those numbers and alter them if you see the need to do that. Secondly, I really think, as I sent you people an email about a sunset provision in this bill, whereby in 3-4 years or whatever time period you choose to take another look at this, because there's new technology evolving every day that may supersede at a less cost to provide the same service. So something along those lines. Also, we might want to look at the usage versus the cost per use. Also, a couple of clarifications. The numbers I had, and I don't know that I sent this to the committee members, in the month of December of last year, the NFB Newsline logged about 75 unique callers, in other words, with different ID numbers, which is about 10 to 15% of their signed-up usage, that the numbers that were given to me from State Services for the Blind. The Dial-In News, which is our local homegrown one, has 88 members and about 68 or about 70% of those members, unique members, use that. Mm-hmm. So the Dial-In News is utilized quite extensively, and it does provide, even though the St. Paul and Minneapolis papers are on both, it provides different articles, one from the other. As far as the service fees go, my own thoughts are that I think it's the time where the blind people can take some ownership in this and pay for some of the services they get. Now, it may not have to be called a user fee. It could be called any other kind of a thing. It could not. Apparently, it cannot be called a subscription fee. However, I think if you look at the contract, it's to prevent somebody from making money. It would be like the newspaper donating 100 copies of the paper to an organization and for their use, and they turn around and sell them for 50 cents a piece and make money. I think that's the intent of what the language is, and again, I think you should look at that prior to making your final decision. I'll stand for any questions. Otherwise, thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Heinel. Any questions? Representative Beard.
Mr. Chair, thank you. Mr. Heinel, again, about how many users are there on this system? System are we referring to?
Okay, Mr. Heinel. The numbers I had from Dick Strong at State Services for the Blind, last December, there were 625 NFB Newsline sign-upees, or people who have signed up in Minnesota for the service. And during the month of December, 75 of them use the service. The Dial-In News has 88 subscribers. They're the ones that pay the $6 a month. And during the month of December, they had, if I remember the number correctly, about 65 users or unique users called into that service, which is about a 70 to 75% usage rate versus a 10 to 15% usage rate on the other one.
Mr. Chair, the one that gets the state subsidy then is NFB's program? Is that
they're the ones that get the grant now.
Mr. Heinel.
Oh, okay. They're the ones that get the grant now, and that your bill would be, or the bill before you would substantially provide them with their funding for the NFB Newsline. Hopefully you will incorporate the Dial-In News if you feel that it is worthy of support also. Because there are things in the Dial-In News that you cannot get off the NFB Newsline.
Now that was my next question is, Dial-In News, what's their business model, and do they offer other values that the NFB site does not offer?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beard, the Dial-In News has the obituaries on it, which us older people do read, incidentally. They also have the TV schedule on it, which does not, and those two are mechanically voiced. In other words, they're an automatic process that doesn't take, as I understand it, a lot of manual or people intervention. The other thing that is really unique about our Dial-In News is that they have a reader that reads the grocery ads and the department store ads for us, which, again, the NFB Newsline does not have the capability of doing. They both have their unique advantages and disadvantages. However, I think, you know, you've got to ensure, as far as I'm concerned, that the Dial-In News survives this effort, because it provides what a lot of people need and want. And I know Chuck Hamilton from State Services for the Blind has agreed to a study to find out what, in fact, Minnesotans read most on the two different news lines, and maybe someday we'll have a hybrid of the two. I don't know.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's helpful information to know as we think about this. Maybe there'll be more questions in a moment.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Beard. Mr. Heinel, so if there was a subscription fee of $6 for both the services, would that be something you'd pay or not?
I am a member of the Dial-In News now, so I'm paying $6 a month, and it would not. I would not be opposed to continuing to pay that $6 a month, and I don't care if they call it an administrative fee or if they call it a surcharge or what they call it, because it shows, I think it shows the legislators and the taxpayers of Minnesota that we're willing to help support what we need to function in society. It's a very minimal amount. You can't even get a newspaper, one newspaper, a month for $6. And if we have both services, we're reading, I think the NFB Newsline, you have the capability of reading 150 newspapers or something along those lines.
Thank you, Mr. Heinel. Any other questions, members? Seeing none, Mr. Heinel, thanks for your comments. And next we have James Kanishka. And then Chuck Hamilton as well. Chuck, do you want to come after James? Okay, and then I'd like to also put the department, the representative from the department on deck, because I'd like to talk about the use of the money out of this TAM fund. James, welcome to our committee, and please identify yourself for the record.
James Konechny, just a Newsline user.
Okay,
and
please proceed.
Just a couple of comments on the time period, on the percentages that we were looking at. Looking at the month of December is just a short time period, and I guess I think it's kind of a poor time period to pick, because a lot of people are busy with holidays, and I mean, sure, people probably still read newspapers, but not near as much as they would in a normal month, I guess. That's my first comment. And the second comment is that I don't use the Dial-In News service, but I do use Newsline, and it helps me a lot. I'm searching for a job right now, and I read business sections out of different papers and lots of different things, and it's really useful and helpful. I mean, everybody knows how useful the newspaper is just to keep current on stuff. So, that's my comments. Thanks.
Okay.
Any questions, I guess?
Mr. Kanishki, do you have any numbers of months of usage or an average or anything like that? Or maybe Mr. Hamilton?
Like, personally, did I read? Or?
Yeah. Well, no, you said December is not good numbers. What month numbers?
Well, I just would pick a longer time period, like maybe a year rather than just one single month.
Sure.
That's what I was thinking.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Seeing none, thank you for your comments. Thank you for coming to our committee. Chuck Hamilton. Mr. Mr. Hamilton. Welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Chuck Hamilton. I'm the Director of Minnesota State Services for the Blind, a program of the Department of Employment and Economic Development. Thank you for the opportunity to provide you with some information and some clarification about and some support in certain parts of what you've heard this afternoon. One of the things I want to make clear, and I did have an opportunity to mention this to Representative Knobloch on the way out, as I understand the intent of the amendment within House File 1214, page 1, lines 17 and 18, this was put in there intended to be a yearly rate, $100,000. What Representative Knobloch was thinking about when he talked about the $40,000 or $50,000 for the biennium was the fact that there was a fiscal note, that when we were asked about the original part of the bill, what would it cost, we did put in the $40,000. That was per year, but I understand the intent of the authors, the proponents of the $100,000 was to limit the potential growth of this activity, and that Newsline, and as amended to include dial-in news, was intended to be continued from year to year. It appears that there's a yearly request from the Public Utilities Commission. So I that was my sense of what the amendment was, both in the Senate and earlier in the House. That was a yearly figure. I would indicate that the information is provided by Ms. Sanders in terms of the differences between services, etc., that comes from information that we've provided to interested parties. Mr. Heinle has indicated some number figures for the month of January, and those numbers were requested by us, by Mr. Heinle, for the month of January, and I don't have that report in front of me, but they sound fairly accurate. What I would indicate is that a lot of people who become blind are elderly, and we're concerned about whether or not they understand the use of the telephone system and going in between different articles and other kinds of things. So we do have a concern about all of our services, to include Newsline, to include dial-in news, and to make sure that more people fully understand it and make a decision whether or not it's useful to them. We have started a program using volunteers to start, if you will, a mentorship situation, so that people, new customers especially, can come to understand this service as well as the others, because I do have a concern that they don't fully understand the use of the telephone and moving between telephone trees, etc. So I think gauging just from the last year numbers or something like that might be premature if a decision is made on that basis. Looking at my notes in terms of other comments that were made, the other comment I would make in that my name does appear on a handout provided by the National Federation of the Blind was information that I did provide to the National Federation of the Blind, as well as Mr. Heinle, other people in the community, as well as some members of the committee. That does relate to an email that was developed at my request earlier this week. I did receive a call, a contact regarding staff questions related to this service fee. In that regard, I do sign the contract for Newsline for the state of Minnesota, and in our contract with the National Federation of the Blind, there is a clause that we cannot assess any user a fee for the service. Again, in that there was a question this week, and that this might come up, I did request a written statement as to the propriety or the allowability, if you will, from the national provider of this service. This committee, I believe, does have that, and it is available to the public, and I would just make the note that according to the information provided to me as put out in the NFP piece of information, Mr. Perret, who is in charge of this service on a national basis, has told me in writing if you were to charge a subscription fee, we would not be able to offer NFP Newsline in Minnesota. Regarding one of the, I have to commend the chair and the committee for having amendments out in view. Not all committees are unnecessarily operated in that fashion. I did have an opportunity to review the amendment that included not only the $6 user fee, but also the message that would identify the state as being a funder of this. That's not a problem. In fact, at the front end, there is a message, as Ms. Sanders has indicated, that this is operated by state service, in part by state services for the blind. If it was to say funded or some other thing, that's certainly an easy thing to do, and would be happy to do that. That is the information I have that either wanted to support or correct in that state services for the blind, as well as myself, was brought up at this committee, and I'd be happy to respond to the chair or any committee members' questions. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Hamilton. Representative Rude.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Hamilton, can you just tell me, just real specifically, if we adopt the amendment so there will be a fee, what specific services will no longer be available?
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Hamilton.
Representative Rude, members of the committee. NFB Newsline is a specific, discrete product under contract between the state of Minnesota and the National Federation of the Blind in Baltimore. I've been advised through the email upon my request whether or not, if we were to exact that, what would happen. They indicate that that discrete product would not be available to the state of Minnesota. What would still be available, unrelated to this and that contract, is the second product that we call Dial-In News and was discussed earlier by a number of people.
Representative Rude, any follow-up? Mr. Hamilton, on that issue, somebody brought it up earlier, if you're to make money off of it, is there a difference between charging a fee to cover the administrative costs of providing the service, the free service to the citizens, or can you only charge the citizens through the TAM fund for this service that they're calling free?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I can answer that to your satisfaction. What I understand with the contract I've signed and the email I've received on the subject is that if we're to charge a subscription fee, I can't really at this point respond any further than that. One might look at intent, Mr. Chairman.
Sure.
I don't know, but I certainly cannot speak for the National Federation of
Blind. Is it correct you charge $6 for the Dial-In News now?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the state product called Dial-In News, mm-hmm. there has been a subscription fee of $6 per month for a number of years. It used to be a much larger service than it is today. It used to be, frankly, a service that utilized volunteers that more fully read the newspapers, and because of some budget cuts and decisions we've made over the years, we changed that to a web crawler software that goes out and gets what is on the electronic version from certain newspapers and bring it in. And as indicated earlier, the Minneapolis paper, one which we've tried to get on NFB Newsline, which means we would get a direct feed from the publisher, an electronic feed. We've been unable to get it for technical reasons. We have been able to get a better product with some assistance on their part through a electronic web crawler. But it has been, currently it is on both systems, it would be my intent to transition off that of Dial-In News. Now, in the future, there are some other ideas we have for the Minnesota product for smaller communities in Minnesota, under the right circumstances, could provide that statewide. But that's beyond the scope.
So, what do you fund that service with right now,
Mr.
the Dial-In News?
Members of the committee, roughly, there's about a $19,000 cost, which appears in the at this moment, I think, on the Senate side. $6,000 of that was through the $6 a month subscription fee. The balance, roughly about $13, is state dollars. And occasionally we were able to get some gift money, that kind of thing, and mix it in if necessary also.
So passing this and taking it all out of the TAM fund would relieve your budget
a little bit.
Mr. Chairman, I would be first to say that this is not part of the governor's budget or initiative, but under the circumstances that you've described, it would, however, we would probably continue using some of our dollars to support some of these things administrative otherwise. The fiscal note for the original House File 1214 shows an actual cost of $45,000, $5,000, which under what we were considering we would continue to provide in the $40,000 from the TAM fund. Certainly, if this bill became law, there would be some things happening in the Dial-In News and possibly some expansion activities that might occur that might not otherwise.
Any other questions, members? So, Mr. Hamilton, would you, assuming that a subscription fee, which you've already implemented on your Dial-In News to help cover some of the costs, was possible, would State Services for the Blind consider doing that if they could expand the service to Dial-In News and NFB Newsline?
Mr. Chairman, I think that's a policy decision that we'll wait and see on. I think there are some issues related to that. Formally, we are neutral on this bill.
And what happens if this doesn't pass? What are you going to do? How are you going to fund the NFB Newsline? Or how could it be funded? Have you looked at any other options?
Mr. Chairman, in fact, I have. I have had a fundraiser who the St. Paul Foundation contracts with send out three requests for funds, actually, to support the NFB Newsline, two, three of the large newspapers, etc. And we have not had any luck in that regard. I don't have any other available dollars within our state budget or otherwise to fund this. I would hope something would happen, but if in fact the dollars aren't there, I assume the service will go away.
Okay. Any other questions, members? Thank you, Representative.
Yeah, I do. Mr. Hamilton, you run Newsline, and the newspapers that you read put into your service, the contract prohibits any kind of a service charge. How does the DIN, what is it called, Dial-In News again?
Dial-In News, yeah.
Yeah, how, do they have the same contribution or the same prohibition, or have they structured their contracts differently?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Beard, it is two separate distinct services with two different ways of doing businesses. The Dial-In News was the second such entity in the United States, and you're going to test my memory here. I think the first one was in Michigan, the second one in Minnesota, and it was at least the early 90s that that occurred. In Minnesota, I was not involved. I was with the agency, but there was a desire to help fund a portion of that through a subscription fee because it was a state-only program, and we were using volunteers, and we get the newspapers and other kinds of things that are read on there from the publisher. You know, we didn't have to worry about any arrangements to be made with anybody. Just for the record, we are an activity under federal law that, for the benefit of certain people, blind, visually impaired, deaf-blind, physically handicapped, and otherwise print handicapped, we don't have to worry about copyright laws and things like that. Federal law specifically allows us to do this, to get the information, make it accessible, control the production and dissemination, and all that kind of thing. But we didn't have to come up with arrangements like that. The National Federation of Blind Newsline Trust is different. They went right to publishers and got an electronic feed that is different than what we got, and made contracts with them to provide the service. That was one of the provisions. So that's what I can speak to on that, Representative Beard.
Okay. Thank you, Mr.
Thank you. Mr. Hamilton, would it be possible to get our council and our staff copies of the contracts that strictly prohibit the fee that you've talked about or others have talked about? I've heard there's an email around, but I'm just curious because it seems like that's been a model you've used to help cover your costs to extend the taxpayers' dollars
with a partnership, and I'm just curious if you could get us your contract or the language that they say is prohibited.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'd be happy to do that. I will provide the staff with a copy of the email. Thought that had happened yesterday, but we'll get that as well as a copy of the contract.
That I think is out, but not. I don't think the contracts are in our file.
Correct. I'd be happy to take care of that.
Okay, thanks. Any other questions? Otherwise, we'll go to the department quick. Ed Garvey. Specifically, Mr. Garvey, I'll let you introduce yourself for the committee, but I'm just curious what is the department's position on going down the road of using TAM funds for this use or the other amendment that I believe is out there is to help pay for closed captioning on TV. What's the TAM fund and what's the department's position on this?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. The Telephone Access Minnesota program, which is TAM, is a program designed to make sure that and maximize the ability of the telephone network to bring in as many people as possible, as many Minnesotans as possible, because the more people that are able to use the telephone network, the better that network is. It's a program to make sure that people have access to the telephone system. It is not a program designed to help them use the phones themselves or to use services that take advantage of the phone. And that, in fact, is sort of one of the differences between the TAM program and the program that you're considering funding here. And so to the extent that we're considering a using of the TAM network, TAM funding source for a use of the phone, there are policy issues that need to be considered in that extent. And I can sort of walk you through those concerns, but it is a policy question that is ultimately in your hands as elected policymakers on how best to use these funds. That's not taxpayers, but ratepayer money.
Why don't you walk us through just some of those concerns briefly, and just Mr. Garvey, and I think this is a critical point that really is the thrust of why this committee should review this, because as I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong, what you said is this fee is collected so the technology is accessible to as many people, primarily the deaf and hard of hearing, through operator-assisted calls, et cetera, et cetera. But do we have other examples in this fund where we're paying for outside network issues? And that, I think, is the issue that, while it might be meritorious, and I'm not saying that, I'm just something I think we need to all be aware of that this bill does. But feel free to comment on that and walk us through any things we maybe haven't thought of.
Mr. Chairman, you've asked two questions. First, the question, in my opinion, is the correctly that this is designed to help those with hard of hearing and the hearing impaired use the telephone network. The other question is using the phones for other services, such as that's being proposed here. I am informed that there are rare instances where that is being used, and with me is Rochelle Garreau from our staff, who is actually the actual administrator of the TAM program for the department.
Rochelle, welcome to our committee. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Rochelle Garreau. I'm with the Minnesota Department of Commerce, and I'm the TAM administrator. Mr. Chairman, committee, the only other use of the TAM funds is for the telephone equipment distribution program, which distributes telecommunications equipment to people who are low income, who can't afford specialized telephone equipment, hearing impaired, deaf blind. So it's also allowing them to access the telecommunications network it's just allowing those who can't afford the specialized equipment to have access to that equipment.
So, Rochelle, do you have any other observations on this bill that we should be thinking about, or Mr. Garvey?
I mean, the policy question is that we need to be paying attention to is, and this actually to some extent ties into some of the telecom issues that you're going to be dealing with later in this committee agenda, is that currently we collect the money for these programs on an access line, on a declining access line basis. As new technologies come on the system, that funding source is under stress because of things like VoIP. So you need to be thinking thoughtful, A, about the funding source itself. We have a solution for that. That's a per number charge that's coming before the committee in a bill in the next several minutes. Second is the policy of using a program designed to provide access to the network for uses on that network instead. Third, and perhaps most importantly, is that the costs of the types of services that we're providing. For example, there's an effort at the federal level to ask these kinds of programs, like the TAM program, to provide video services capabilities to the deaf and hard of hearing. That will significantly increase the cost of providing a service. This fund will have to fund that too. So it's very much a, just because there's a funding source here, we need to be very careful of what we're using it for, why we're using it, and where that funding is coming from. And those are our issues that we have. The bills before you, Mr. Chairman, in the grand scheme of things, don't, with the caps that are in place, the $100,000 and the $300,000, those are policy issues that you're asking, but at least they have caps and we're not opening this up to all sorts of other kinds of funding sources or an unlimited funding mechanism. So with those kinds of caps, then at least those give us some comfort, but otherwise we would have pause.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. And any questions, members? Seeing none, Representative Powell, did you have one?
No.
Oh, all right.
How is this gambling over here?
With that, Representative Emmer has an amendment. We'll start with Representative Emmer's.
I do, Mr. Chairman. It's actually Representative Gunther's amendment. But he's in another committee hearing. It's the A2 amendment.
Representative Emmers moves the A2 amendment.
And I believe there's someone here to testify to it, but it's fairly self-explanatory. It first sets a cap on the issue we've just been talking about, shall not exceed $100,000 in annually, and then it also creates a... It creates an opportunity for the Commissioner of Human Services to enter into grant agreements with television station to create live local news programming that's accessible, and it sets a cap on funds that would be used for that. Mr. Chairman, with that, I'd offer the amendment, remove the amendment, and then there is someone here to testify on it if you wish.
Okay, Representative Emmers, why don't we just take quick testimony and then discuss. So Representative Emmers deals with the additional $300,000 up to $300,000 closed captioning costs out of this fund as well, right? Mrs. Hartnett?
Excuse me. Mr. Chair, members of the
committee. Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony and as brief as possible, of course.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Mary Hartnett. I'm with the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. We're a governor-appointed commission that's charged with advocating for equal opportunity for deaf, hard of hearing, and deaf-blind children and adults. And we'd like to thank Representative Emmer for introducing this amendment. The service that we're talking about would also provide news access through use of the telephone line for a captionist in a remote location to provide live news, real-time captioning for live news broadcasts in greater Minnesota. They're currently not required by the FCC to be provided. So live news broadcasts that are provided in Duluth and in Rochester and in Mankato and Alexandria are not provided with live captioning. So residents in that area don't have access to that service. It costs $150 an hour for a captionist to provide the service 365 days a year in four locations, and then it would also provide captioning for 104 hours of live news broadcasting on public television. And we have here today Marion Lucas to explain why this service is important.
Hi there, my name is Marion Lucas, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm a member of the Access Committee for the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People. I want to thank you for giving me the chance to speak on behalf of Representative Gunther's amendment to House File 1214. This amendment will provide funds for real-time captioning for the local live news broadcast in greater Minnesota. The service is provided by a captionist who uses a phone to listen to the live broadcast from a remote location and types the information that she or he is hearing into a machine. It's like a court reporter's machine. And I'm also here to support the electronic news service for the blind, too. I'm speaking today on behalf of my friends and colleagues in greater Minnesota. I am here in the Twin Cities, and I'm very lucky because of that. The FCC requires that the 25 largest news markets in the country provide real-time captioning, and Twin Cities is number 14. But the next largest viewing market here is Duluth, and they're number 135 on the list. They do not have to provide live captioning of their news. I can watch any live news broadcast any time of the day with real-time captioning, so I can access the news as easily as any of you can. But my friends who are in Rochester or Duluth, Mankato or Alexandria, who are deaf, deafblind, and hard of hearing, cannot watch their live local news broadcast. And if I go to visit them, I can't either. And not having access to those live local news broadcasts prevents deaf and hard of hearing people, and yes, some deafblind people, even from participating fully in their communities. It keeps them from knowing what's happening with their friends and neighbors and businesses. And just as an example, last week, Tony Fairbanks, who is a member of the Minnesota Commission Serving Deaf and Hard of Hearing People, was here testifying on behalf of this amendment in the Senate. She is a deaf woman. She lives in Ogina, Minnesota. Her husband is also deaf, and he is a member of the White Earth Tribe. Now, Ogina is not far from Red Lake. And when the incident at Red Lake occurred last week, Tony and her husband were left completely in the dark. They turned on their local TV and they saw their local news broadcaster with a microphone in her hand. They saw the Red Lake School in the background, but there were no captions because it was a live broadcast. So nothing was available to let them know if their friends on the reservation were alive or hurt or what was going on. And that incident is a very incident, yes, but the everyday news that occurs in those smaller cities is really important to the people who live there. They want to be a part of the community, but it's hard for them when they don't know what's happening and they don't get to share in the stories that are being reported on live TV. Just a little bit more here. The people in greater Minnesota don't know what's happening in their own region. They have to try to piece information together or wait to read the newspaper the next day. And as you can imagine, deaf and hard of hearing people can't listen to the radio to get their news. So imagine if you were trying to watch the news without sound. Try to go home tonight, turn off your television sound, and understand what's happening with your local news broadcast. This benefits more than just deaf and hard of hearing people. I've talked with another deaf people around the state, and there's one woman who is deaf-blind, but she has enough hearing and enough sight that she can see the screen and read captions at close range. She says captioning is a bonus for her and other hard-of-hearing people who can't hear every word, but they rely on the captions to understand what's happening on the screen. So we know that we're going to have a lot more seniors, and they're becoming hard-of-hearing, or people who are born deaf, or people who have a combined hearing and vision loss need access to the news. So please support the establishment of this fund to help us get the access we need to our communities. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions, members? Seeing none, thank you for your comments. Representative Emmers, just my question. Oh, he's not even here. This is amendment, and he's not even here.
We've got several questions for Representative Honor, or Representative Emmer, Your Honor.
That's why he's gone. Well, with that, how long was
it? Mr. Chair. This is Maria.
Maria.
Representative Rude. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm not sure who the question should go to.
Shoot.
Throw it out there? Okay. I did have some individuals who are blind speak to me today, and they're very concerned about this amendment. And I'm just confused, and perhaps it's because it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon and I didn't get lunch, but I'm fuzzy on if in some way we will be harming them, if they will be losing services if we adopt this amendment.
Sure. Good point, Representative Rude. I'll just ask, is there anybody that wants to testify against this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Judy Sanders.
Ms. Sanders, come to the come to the stand. Okay.
Hey, Mr. Chair. Representative Emmer will be here momentarily. He's
happy?
Unavoidably detained.
Okay. Well, and members, while Ms. Sanders comes to the... This is part of the crux of the matter is... These services do cost money, and how, first of all, it is a policy question. Do we expand the fee that's being collected for accessing the technology to this, and does this open up a slippery slope in the future? And that's something I think we need to... I welcome the discussion on or your opinion. Representative Emmers, your amendment just failed. We're on the eighth. No, Representative
Emmers. Mr. Chairman, that's great. Can we move on to the next one?
No, it didn't, Representative Emmers. Ms. Sanders had some testimony.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Emmers.
Please identify yourself for the record.
My name is Judy Sanders, and I'm still the same person I was 15 minutes ago, or an hour, whenever we started. Help is on the way. Representative Rude, there are two amendments. One of them has not yet been introduced, I don't think. Mm-hmm. The one we were opposing is the one that would charge money for this service to the user. We wholeheartedly support the closed captioning that was just presented in Representative Emmer's amendment. We think that you can prevent a slippery slope by judging the merits of each thing you vote for, and we see merit in both these projects. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Sanders.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Emmer.
That sounded like a very easy question. Or was it?
Well, the question was, Ms. Rude had heard that there was some opposition to an amendment, and the answer was it wasn't this amendment. Any other questions? Representative Atkins, did you have a question?
No, Mr. Chair, I do not.
Any other questions?
We have Representative Emmer back.
On the A3, on the A2 amendment. A2 amendment. Seeing none, we'll proceed to vote. All those in favor of the A2 amendment
Please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Members, we are running out of time.
We are.
If we're going to get through any of the other stuff to set us up for telecom next Tuesday, we're going to have to probably proceed along or set this aside shortly. But A4 is the next amendment. Let's bring that up.
A4,
is that? Oh, it's not circulated. It's a short amendment. I'll have Mr. Eloff just read it quick. Bob, do you want to read this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members, this amendment would add a paragraph on page 1 after the last line on page 1 of House File 1214 that reads as follows. If the fund balance falls below a level capable of fully supporting all programs eligible under Subdivision 5 and Section 248.062, expenditures under Section 248.062 shall be suspended, and expenditures under Section 237.53 shall be fully funded. Expenditures under Section 248.062 shall resume when the Commissioner of Commerce determines there is a sufficient fund balance to fund those expenditures.
Any questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative
Hilty.
Hilty.
Mr. Chair, I wonder if Mr. Elf could read that in English.
Mr. Adolf, actually, why don't the chair move that amendment? The A4 moves it. The chair will move the A4 amendment. Representative Hilty, actually, this was an issue just raised by the department and some others prior to the department raising it to me had said, well, what happens if, while there's a $4 million surplus now, what happens if there's not a surplus someday? Does the deaf and hard of hearing that's being funded right now get shorted as well? And my thought is maybe these would be the programs that would be at least second and third in priority if there was a shortfall. Right now there's a $4 million fund balance, so it's inconceivable to think that that could happen, but that's in English what it would do. Is that right, Mr. Eva?
That's right, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Representative Hilty?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Okay. Any other questions? Seeing none, all those signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. Members, the A3 amendment is out there as well. I believe there's more controversy and questions on that. Time is running out if we're going to get through some telecom bills. I am going to ask, I'm going to intend to lay this over and ask the parties to work with myself, Representative Knobloch, and see if there's get the contract language and see if, in fact, what was said earlier is a problem, rather than taking the committee time to work out some of those questions that don't seem to have answers right now. Let's hold off on that, and we will lay this bill over until Tuesday. So with that, the chair will lay over House File 1214.
Representative Beard?
Yes, sir.
Let's bring your bill back up on the table, then we're going to make this as quick as we can.
Sharon is having his bill heard right now. But we're zealous.
He never comes. Sharon's having his bill heard. We're dumping.
More
Look for more Lenny, too.
Okay. I just, Mike. Sorry.
I ain't gonna roll call.
Representative Beard, Chair will take off the table, House File 2129. We're in the middle of an amendment.
A1 amendment.
The A1 amendment.
It was the A1 amendment.
And Representative Beard, I needed to look at that language and see. Perhaps, Representative Beard, we should just accept that language and we could work out some of the details between here and the
Mr. Chairman.
Rules Committee or wherever our Representative Atkins ends up sending it.
Mr. Chairman, wherever the committee ends up sending it is fine with me.
Okay. If that would be all right, I'd submit to you that we could work out some of the issues on that. So with that, the Representative Beard will accept the A1 amendments as a friendly amendment. Representative Beard, do you have more comments on the bill?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I do if I can talk real slow for a couple moments here. I knew that time is going to be of the essence because we do have a 4:30. We've got to get some folks moving on to other things here. I think that this bill, the essence of it was heard in the complete hearing of the Racino bill in the House Gaming Subcommittee Division. It's a division here, I guess. And so I have no problem bringing it back to this full committee and asking it to be referred straight to rules. I understand that there is some issue with that, but Mr. Chair, I'm I'm going to take a few more questions.
Representative Beard,
more testifiers until we find folks that can go back and hear about this and vote on it.
Representative Beard, I got some questions on this as well, but I'm wondering if we should hold this over so we could get into the telecom bills. Otherwise, we won't have them to work on Tuesday either. What's your desire?
Well, let's see. We had originally talked about telephone off-track betting. They're kind of related. So, Mr. Chair, I suppose we could lay this over and take it up. When do you think? The next Tuesday would be the earliest we could do it?
Yeah, that's when we meet next. And
Mr. Chair, that would give us an opportunity to work on some of the language in the A1 amendment and either find shuffling cards that can deal in Braille or find a way to accommodate the concerns of the professionals that have to work with it. So.
Okay.
That's what we're laying it over.
Where were you? We're looking on it.
Representative Beard, I'd like to work on that language. If we can clean it up before we get it out of here, that'd be desirable to me. Let's lay it over till Tuesday.
Mr. Chair, has my motion been acted on yet? Perhaps we could just vote on this and dispose of it. Then we have one less thing to do on Tuesday.
Well, your call, Representative Beard. Is there any other questions, members?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to request that we do pass it right to the Rules Committee and be done with this today.
Okay. Any further questions? Representative Atkins on the bill. The
bill is amended.
The bill as amended, Representative Beard accepted the amendment.
What are we doing?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
We're going to try to work out the language. Representative Atkins.
Mr. Chair, thank you very much. I only have, 30 or 40 questions. and I don't, maybe the better the better approach would be, I know Representative Beard fairly well. I know that he's a believer in the process and in an opportunity to have bills fully heard. In fact, he was kind enough to catch me yesterday in the hallway to let me know that this was coming, and I appreciate that, and I appreciate the honorable person that he is with respect to that. With that in mind, my understanding is that all of the casino expansion bills have been referred to the Tax Committee, which is where they are about to be heard, potentially, as I think they were talking about hearing them as early as tomorrow. Now that may be off for a day.
Mr. Chair, to this point.
Representative Poppe.
Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, this is not a casino expansion bill.
Well, Representative Atkins, go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you, Representative Hoppe. As I said, my understanding is that the casino expansion bills have been referred to the Tax Committee for hearing, and that they're about to be heard there. My concern is, Representative Beard, if this bill, whatever path it takes, were to find its way to the House floor and became a vehicle for the casino expansion bill. Would you share with me the intention to have it referred to the appropriate committee to which all the casino expansion bills have been referred, which is the Tax Committee?
Representative Beard.
If I understand, Mr. Chair and Representative Atkins, the question, if this bill passes to the General Register or makes it through the Rules Committee to the General Register, if someone was to attempt to amend a racino or casino onto it, would I stand and refer it back to taxes?
That's my question.
Ooh. Well, Mr. Chair and members, that actually hadn't occurred to me, but it would be my bill on the General Register, and I suppose if somebody else wanted to attempt to amend it, I'd allow it to go to the will of the floor. To sit right here today, I would not make that commitment to you, no, Mr. Representative Atkins.
Well, Representative Beard, I think, I wonder if the card club, when it first passed, even went to Tax Committee. You don't know that, maybe, do you?
Well, Mr. Chair, I remember last year when I found myself in the unusual position of arguing for a tax increase on the floor. There actually were. There was a bill that imposed taxes on this, and I think that had gone. No, I can't even speak. My memory's foggy on that issue. I just remember being zinged by a certain representative for the new tax thing. This, however, doesn't do that. This merely lifts a card club table authorization from 50 to 90, and that strikes me as really pretty innocuous in this context. Well, the rules that are in place now and the...
Representative Beard, Representative Atkins, we got to proceed something with this. Representative Atkins, are you going to move this to the Tax Committee? I'm not even sure that that motion... I'm not sure that the motion is in order with the rules, but... to proceed this discussion along, is that where you're going with your discussion?
Mr. Chair, I have several questions. Since this didn't make a visit in the gaming division, nor did it apparently make a real visit here, and the goal is to get it passed out, apparently it may well only go to rules and nowhere else. My concern is that it just be heard for what it is, and I've actually, Representative Beard, just to let you know, I like the first portion of it quite a bit. I think that makes a great deal of sense, and it allows Canterbury to be reimbursed for something, for a product that they ought to be reimbursed for. The card club expansion, I just have several questions on it. And I guess most of those questions are probably appropriate both for here, but also for the Tax Committee and for state government finance.
Well, just a second. Representative Atkins, you said it didn't go through the gaming division. Representative Beard, did you say earlier that this provision wasn't the Racino bill that came out of the gaming division?
Mr. Chair, yes, it was.
And Representative Atkins, you sit on the gaming division, correct?
I do, Mr. Chair.
Did you miss this in the gaming division?
Mr. Chair, I saw the bill. I don't believe it is the same language that is in the Racino bill. And I looked through the Racino bill earlier to check because I don't believe that it matches up. So thank you for the question, Mr. Chair. I appreciate that.
Well,
so I wouldn't want people to think I'm trying to trod the same ground twice, but this is a slightly different bill. So I appreciate the opportunity to...
For my information, then, Representative Atkins, why don't you tell us what the slight differences are?
My understanding, Your Honor, and the problem with not having the Racino bill here is that I believe that there's... Well, why don't... In fact, the better approach might be to ask Representative Beard, since it's his bill.
Representative Beard?
Mr. Mr. Chair, actually, the unfortunately, Representative Atkins, the part of the bill you like is covered by delete all amendment and is actually gone in the bill as amended. There is nothing to do with the reimbursement for telecasting at other tracks. What's left is, in essence, what was in the Racino bill. However, it's even more restrictive than what was in the Racino bill. The Racino bill, I'm given to understand, removed all card cable limits. But this actually just moves the number from 50 to 90 table. Currently, they're allowed to do 50. This just moves it to 90 rather than leaving it as an unlimited number of tables.
And Mr. Chair, with due respect, I withdrew my motion that it be sent to the gaming division because I respect what Representative Westerberg, he was comfortable enough with it, and you were. But my concern is that this, if it becomes the vehicle for a gambling expansion bill, that we've skirted the tax committee and we've skirted state government finance. And I'm just asking for the author, who is a person that is very much dedicated to the appropriate process and that bills be heard by the right committees, that rather than ask all of the questions that I have, that if I know that they're going to end up back in state government finance where it belongs or in the tax committee with respect to the revenue issues, that I don't need to ask those questions now, just as long as I know that it's not going to go straight from rules to the floor and become the vehicle for the Racino bill.
Representative Boyd, any follow-up?
Chair and members of the committee, I can't give you the commitment that it won't become a vehicle for anything. But taxes.
You've had that experience before, haven't you?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, yeah, I've got blueprints all over my posterior that regard to those things. But anyhow, seriously, this has no tax implications and absolutely nothing to do with any state agency that's going to incur any cost except the Gambling Control Board or State Racing Commission, I believe. Gets to decide on whether they get 53 tables or 79 or whatever it is.
To this point, Representative Beard, Representative Atkins, is generally the committee chair's prerogative. If there's the dire concerns they have, they request the bill, they get it.
And, Mr. Chair, I give you my commitment on that. If Representative Prinke asks for this bill, that's where it's going.
So with that, let's, Representative Atkins, we can't speak for those committee chairs right here. If you've got your questions and you're serious about it, let's start asking them, and we may have to lay them over, and we may... you may be standing between us and the committee coming back after session tonight.
You've humbled me, you've beaten me down, and I will not ask any further questions. I don't want to keep people away from the ability to dine or to go and vote on the bonding bill, and I don't want to make them have to come back. So I heard what I needed to hear from Representative Beard, which is that if the chair of the tax committee requests this bill, he will honor that, and it will go to the tax committee. If I asked the same question with respect to state government finance, chair of the state government finance committee requests it, will you honor that request and want to go there?
Mr. Chair, the short answer is yes. The longer question is I can't imagine why he would, but certainly.
Good enough for me, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Chair of Transportation wants it, they can have it too.
I suppose, Mr. Chair. I've been here several times.
You have to take a road to get out there. Representative Beard. Representative Healthy.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not having been here earlier. I was waiting to have a bill heard in the tax committee. I appreciate why no one would want to go there. However, with respect to the amendment that apparently is now the bill, did anyone from the Racing Commission testify in this amendment?
Representative Hilty, not that I recall. Mr. Sampson did from Racino.
Mr. Chair, I do think that there's an implication for the Racing Commission and the Gambling Control Board, who are supposed to oversee this operation. If we're in essence doubling it, I can't imagine that it would be doubled without any additional oversight.
Representative Beard, the Racing Commission had any opinion on this?
Mr. Chair, apparently excuse me, my friend Mr. Sampson sat through extensive testimony in the gaming division a little while ago. Can I let him speak to that?
Yeah.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilpe.
Please identify yourself for the record again.
Sorry, Randy Sampson, Canterbury Park. I obviously can't speak for Mr. Kruger or the Racing Commission. They are aware of this bill. They have seen it. I have discussed it with Mr. Kruger. In terms of any concerns about costs, the way that the original and current card club bill reads is that all regulatory costs are billed to Canterbury. So there would be no state impact. There potentially would be some additional Racing Commission costs or staffing that would be required, and those would be billed directly to Canterbury as the current regulatory costs are.
Thank you. Mr. Sampson.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
And Mr. Sampson, can you just refresh my memory on this? In the current card club operation, what is the role of the Gambling Control Board? Do they have oversight of the operation?
Mr. Sampson.
Mr. Chair and Representative Hilty, the Gambling Control Board oversees the pull tabs and has nothing to do with Canterbury, but Frank Ball and the AGDED does have enforcement oversight at Canterbury. They
that contract, was my next question, Mr. Sampson.
They contract with the Racing Commission and provide enforcement and security assistance out there. I know Mr. Ball was here earlier, but I don't see him here now. Oh, yeah. He is in the audience if you'd like to ask him a question.
Representative Hilton.
Mr. Chair, thank you. I think it would be appropriate to ask Mr. Ball if this has any implications for his agency.
Mr. Ball.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Frank Ball, Director of Alcohol Gambling Enforcement Department of Public Safety. Your question was if we had knowledge of this proposal to expand the tables at Canterbury. Is that the question?
Mr. Chair, Mr. Ball, the question was if this expansion took place, what would be the implications for your agency?
We have discussed this with Mr. Kruger, the executive director at Canterbury, the executive director of the Minnesota Racing Commission. There would probably be some additional expenses for us, but Mr. Sampson is correct. That would be billable directly to our agency through the Minnesota Racing Commission as expenses incurred by the commission, payable by Mr. Sampson's company for enforcement and regulatory oversight.
Thank you, Mr. Ball. Any other questions? Representative Peterson?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm just wondering to Representative Beard about the harness track license and up in Columbus Township. Does this apply to this 50 to 90, one tournament to two tournaments, total no more than an increase of 21 days? Does that apply to that future venture? And if so or if not, have those people up in that area been notified? I mean, after they get their 50 days of racing in, are they going to be 90 tables and two tournaments and 21 days and that type of scenario?
Representative Beard.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand the law, after they get their 50 days, if they wish to have card club, they're certainly happy to or willing, able to apply for it, and that it would apply to any operation on any approved horse racing track. So I think the answer is yes, if they wish to do so.
Follow up? Yeah, just a second. Have they been notified of that? The area of residence?
Mr. Chair, Representative Peterson, I certainly have not notified them. The intent of this is to lift the limits on tables at existing racetracks. If and when that one's built, I'd certainly be happy to give them a call if you forward me their card. But I have a hunch, Mr. Chair, that they've got high-powered people to pay attention to the rules also, that, and they'll already know and be rejoicing that the limits have been lifted. That would be my hunch.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilty.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Sampson, I'm honestly, I can't remember How many tables did you have when the card club started at Canterbury? Have we increased this once already?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilty, the law has not changed. The original law that was passed authorized up to 50 tables for card playing activities. When we opened the room, we had 38, and due to demand, we have increased that to the 50 that's been authorized, and at this point, the demand does exceed our capacity, and that's the reason we're here. We have a lot of times where there's a couple-hour wait for people to play and has turned people off, and we believe it's appropriate to try to have enough opportunities for the demand that's out there.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. No other questions. Chair or Representative Beard renews his motion to pass House File 2129, refer it to the Rules Committee. All those in favor, as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign.
No.
Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Beard. Representative Anderson, I think your bill is up first, House File 373. Members, we're going to have to keep this to 5 minutes or less. The idea of the rest of the agenda is to give us just a flavor of the bill. As I indicated earlier, next Tuesday we will start marking up the telecom bill, the House File. House File 1579 will be the vehicle we'll match up with the Senate. So present us your bill just for some quick overview for the committee to get a feel of it. And if you have an interest in pursuing it further, work with people on getting amendments ready for next Tuesday to House File 1579. Representative Anderson. I'm going to set my stopwatch, and we're going to have to try to stay it under 5 minutes on each bill.
Okay, Mr. Chairman.
So I'm just warning you, so if I cut you off, nobody can say I didn't warn you. So, Representative Anderson, tell us what your bill does.
Many of the school districts in the state require you to make a long-distance call to your home or another place if need arises. This makes a hardship on the student as well as a parent or guardian. In many cases, it puts a child at mercy of choosing the right person to go home with or ride with. This bill, House File 373, would require the Department of Commerce to present a plan to the legislature by January 5, 2006, to expand calling areas to include entire secondary school attendance areas. In so doing, the problem would be eliminated. That's the bill, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Representative Anderson. Well, we open for questions. Representative Anderson, we'll just have you move to move, House File 373. Moves to lay over House File 373 for possible inclusion in an omnibus telecom bill.
Okay.
Any questions, members? Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Could we have the Department of Commerce comment on what they have to do to expand a local calling area for a school district or for a school attendance area?
Someone from the department? And Diane, anybody else that's going to want to testify for or against this briefly, better get in line. Diane?
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, Diane Wells with the Minnesota Department of Commerce. Currently, school district boundaries, as you know, don't match up with many other boundaries, and that would include telephone exchange boundaries. In the past, this issue has been addressed by having customers of telephone companies petition for extended area service. We are not seeing much demand for that. I checked before I came up here, and in 2003, I think we had one petition for extended area service. In 2004, we had two, and this year we have not had any to date. So we're not seeing a lot of demand from telephone customers for larger calling areas, whether that would be for school districts, for regional commercial centers, calling neighboring towns for hospitals, etc.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anybody else Any questions for Dan or anybody else want to just make brief comments? Seeing none, Representative Anderson, you're well under 5 minutes. Thank you. Thank you for House File 379 is laid over for possible inclusion. 373. House File 407, Representative Sieben. Representative Sieben, I told you 10 minutes earlier, that's been shrunk to 5, so I'll start the stopwatch and give you a little warning.
Great. Thank you, Chair Westrom.
Time. Well done. I moved that one.
That didn't count against your time. Let's do 407, and then we're looking for Representative Holberg to deal with the cell phone issue. Maybe the two of you can cover it together. So go ahead.
Mr. Chair, is someone going to move the bill?
Representative Erickson will move House File 407 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus telecom bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. This bill is, or the language that's now in the omnibus bill, is a combination of my bill, House File 407, and Representative Holberg's bill, which I don't have the House file number in front of me. But essentially what it does, it first says that a customer must give authority to list a customer's cell, to list his or her cell phone number in a national cell phone directory. There's been a lot of talk around the fear of a national cell phone directory, not necessarily the fear, I guess, but the thought that customers or consumers should have the option of opting out or, excuse me, opting into a cell phone directory. And essentially there, I can explain more details of the bill if the members would like, but really what it says is consumers can't be charged a fee for not including their number in the cell phone directory, and then it provides that if there are violations of the section, that the Attorney General's office has the ability to investigate and seek an injunction if there is a violation.
Okay. Any questions?
Yes.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a representative of the industry here to comment on this?
If they want to comment, they can come up and comment. Anybody? Well, you better fight for who's in front line because you're going to be cut off at 5 minutes. So, well, that means you got 10 seconds each. So, Mr. Murphy, can you guys consolidate your testimony?
I just want, Mr. Chair, a comment on regulating the creation and maintenance of a wireless directory.
Sure. Mr. Murphy, why don't you start?
Mr. Chairman, we've worked out...
Identify yourself for the record, please.
Tom Murphy, representing Singular. We've worked out the language with Representative Holber and Representative Stephen.
And that language is different, a little different from this bill?
Yes.
Or?
Yes. Mr. Chairman, the language that we've worked out is different.
Is it in the Senate language that was passed in the Senate?
Correct.
Okay. And that will be in the read-all amendment in our bill.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding, I'm sorry, that the agreement that was worked out between the Senate and Representative Holberg, her bill has already been heard in various other committees, and this is the first time my bill has been heard.
Okay.
So that it was my understanding that that agreement was going to be the language in the omnibus telecom bill, so I apologize for the confusion.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman, not to add more confusion to that, but there is a difference between what has come to be Representative Holberg's bill through the process and what's in the omnibus bill. And essentially it's only the remedy section is slightly different under what Representative Holberg's wishes were as opposed to what the Senate's wishes were, if that makes sense. So
okay.
That has been agreed upon with the industry as well.
And that's something you're working on?
Mr. Chairman, the existing Representative Holberg's existing bill, the standalone, I can't recall the House file number.
1230, I believe.
1230, correct. As that has gone through the process, it's currently in the form in which Representative Holberg and the industry have agreed.
Okay, and that I understand Representative Holberg won't be able to make it for her bill, but Representative Sieben, Representative Holberg, and others will work out to bring an amendment forward, I'm assuming, to try to work out that language, and you can amend it on Tuesday.
Correct. That's that my understanding.
Work, Representative Sieben?
Yes, works for me.
Okay.
Let me just add, Mr. Chairman, that the bill, as Representative Holberg's standalone bill represents, reflects all of the concerns that Representative Sieben just shared with the committee. So I think it's a pretty good product.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, that's all I need to hear.
All right. Anybody else in the industry that has to talk about something different than what Mr. Murphy just represented? You've got 30 seconds. So.
Thank you.
Seeing none, Representative Sieben, sorry to rush you, but that was a good job. You got another bill? Let's cover that. Well, I'll start your 5 minutes again.
Great, I'll try to go.
And let's talk about Ken. So the chair will lay House File 407 over for possible inclusion. Representative Erickson will again move House File 1052 for possible inclusion, to be laid on the table and for possible inclusion in the Omnibus Telecom Bill. Representative Sieben.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. This is a relatively simple bill which says that a long-distance company may not charge a customer for long-distance service once he or she has canceled that service. The long-distance company may bill to the end of any term of the contract, but the company, the long-distance company, may not refer customers to the local telephone company to cancel their service. It sounds a little bit confusing, but I heard from constituents who thought they had canceled their long-distance service after calling their long-distance carrier, but in fact had needed to call their local carrier. So, and it's my understanding that the language in the omnibus bill that is before us has been amended to include an effective date of next year.
From the Senate.
Correct.
I believe that's okay. So I believe that's right. It is in the Senate
or
bill.
It needs to be amended into the omnibus bill still.
It'll be in the lead all amendment that we will first put on House File 1579, and then we'll start amending from there.
Okay. So once that later effective date is amended into the bill, which would be, so it would be effective next year, it's my understanding that the industry does not oppose this.
Okay. So any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Representative Sieben, to what extent is this a problem? What did you find as you gathered your information?
Representative Erickson, if I could have Amy Brenmoen, she's a consumer advocate from the Attorney General's office, speak to that. I personally have heard from several constituents, but perhaps Amy can speak to the statewide.
Please state your name for the record.
My name is Amy Brenmoen. I'm a consumer advocate with the Minnesota Attorney General's office.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, the problem of residual billing or billing after a customer has canceled their long-distance service has been a large ongoing problem that we've heard from consumers, I'd say, for the past 5 or 6 years. We initially worked with Representative Dabney to present this bill last year and agreed to hold off waiting for an FCC ruling to go through the FCC. And last year, the complaints for a residual billing after customers had canceled their long distance actually spiked, probably the highest number that we've had ever. So around 300 or 400 complaints we got.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. Does that mean that there were no refunds on these billings? Did you track that or have some process to follow up to see if these consumers then did receive a refund if they were continually billed?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, there are two problems that that happen. One is a customer will cancel, call the long distance company and believe they've canceled their service and continue to be billed monthly service charge or usage fees even though they're not using the service. Mm-hmm. And the long distance companies blame communication between the local phone company as the problem. The other is where the customer calls the long distance company and cancels their service, and instead of canceling the service, actually gets kicked off of their discount calling plan. And so if the customer accidentally uses the service, they may be billed, instead of their discount plan of 5 or 10 cents per minute, upwards of $3.50 per minute, much to their surprise. I don't know how many customers were able to get a refund before they that didn't contact our office, but I know that with the monthly fees of $4.95 or $3.95, that there's only so much effort people are willing to put into getting their $3.95 refunded.
So, Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson,
did the AG's office and your department have some responsibility for writing this language?
Mr. Chair, Representative Erickson, yes.
Okay. Any other questions? With that, the chair will lay over House File 1052. Representative Sieben, I understand this is in the Senate language that would be in our delete all amendment to get our bill at least in a shape to start from. My hope would be to maybe just try to get that on at the end of today's meeting just so the House revisers can engross it, and then we have something to work off of for Tuesday. But with that, thank you.
Thank you, Chair Weston.
Next, we'll take up Representative Hoppe, House File 1639. I'm already starting your time, Representative Hoppe.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Members, this is a good bill. Please support it.
Tell us what it does.
I will stand for
Representative Hoppe, I'll move.
1639, Mr.
Representative Hoppe moves House File 1639 to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus telecom bill.
Mr. Chair, I could tell you what it does in some detail, but as we are short for time, I think I would like to have Mr. Knickerbocker come up here and tell you in accurate detail.
Okay, let's do that in brief form.
Maybe ask him to.
And Representative Mr. Knickerbocker maybe could comment on House File 1728. Representative Beard's Representative Beard is gone right now, but we'll do that right after this. Mr. Knickerbocker, please identify yourself for the record and be brief. As Steve Largent says, be brief, brother, be brief. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Jerry Knickerbocker. I'm here this afternoon on behalf of the Minnesota Telecom Alliance, which is a trade group for the local telephone companies in the state of Minnesota, some Cedarbrooks, and as well as some wireless company members. The bill that Representative Hoppe has introduced on behalf of the MTA is an attempt to recognize the changing landscape, the fact that technology and competition have leapfrogged our existing regulations, and we need different tools to compete with the changing environment. And one of the things that we need some relief on is the current rules and regulations that are in place that affect wireline companies. Need to understand that wireline companies are the only ones that are regulated by the state of Minnesota. Cable's not regulated by the state. Wireless isn't regulated. The internet service providers aren't regulated. The voiceover IP providers aren't regulated. But wireline telephone companies are. And what this bill does is say, all right, we need to have some further deregulation of our service offerings. This bill sets up the fact that there will be basic service offered in every telephone exchange in the state, so that if you as a telephone company opt into providing this level of basic service, you're required to provide this basic level of service in every exchange in which you operate. In exchange for that, there's consumer protection, and the consumer is guaranteed the fact that there will be basic telephone service at an affordable rate that will be reviewed by the PUC, the existing regulatory agency. In addition to the basic service that's guaranteed for all consumers in the state at an affordable price, you will be deregulated, you the telephone company. However, there will be an oversight, a regulatory oversight on the part of the department and the commission to be responsible for consumer complaints, quality of service issues, public safety issues like TAP, TASIP, and the 911 program, as well as any kind of complaints that customers have, as well as other telephone companies. Those would be arbitrated and mediated and resolved by Public Utilities Commission in much the current manner as done now. So all this bill does is attempt to recognize where the industry is eventually leading to. It may be a little bit ahead of its time, Mr. Chairman and members, but I think in 5 or 6 years from now, this is what the industry will be looking like. It'll be a basic level of service that's guaranteed for everybody at an affordable price, but everything else will be deregulated. And this is the basis of the bill that we've introduced, and you know, we'd like your favorable consideration on how you know, we get to this particular point. This is a transition time for us. It's a transition time for the regulators, and this is an attempt to kind of address that issue.
Thank you, Mr. Knickerbocker. Any questions, members? Just under a minute left on this bill. Otherwise, Mr. Knickerbocker, I'd maybe just have you move into comments on Representative Beard's House File 1728. With that, I'll dispose of Representative Hoppe's bill. We'll just lay it over for possible inclusion. And Representative Hoppe will move Representative Beard's House File 1728 for to be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the telecom, omnibus telecom bill.
Thank you on his behalf and mine, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Knickerbocker, why don't you give us just a, you feel comfortable giving us?
Mr. Chairman, I'm the wrong person to ask to do that. Representative Beard's bill is a bill that he had introduced on behalf of Quest, and they approached the dereg issue a little differently. So
okay, Mr. Stanek's going to come forward. Sorry, Mr. Knickerbocker. Mr. Stanek?
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman.
Be brief is the phrase of the day. Did you hear that?
I will do that.
All right, thank you. Welcome to the committee. Please identify
yourself.
Thank you.
My name is John Stanek. I'm the Minnesota president of Quest Communications. We are a telecommunications company here in Minnesota employing 4,600 employees. The approach of Representative Beard's bill is very similar to Representative Hoppe's. It recognizes that in the wireline industry, there is increased competition in the state of Minnesota. In addition, a number of forms of technologies that are not regulated by the state are also providing voice services that provide options to Minnesota consumers, including the cable companies, which are offering voice services here in the Twin Cities area. For example, both Time Warner and Comcast will give you residential phone service, wireless companies, and then voice over internet, which I know the committee has talked about a lot as an emerging technology. The primary difference in the bills is that Representative Beard's bill also takes the approach that basic rates for residential and small business consumers would continue to be regulated by the Minnesota Commission. All other forms of service would not be regulated. It would allow for increases in the basic service rate. Currently, residential rates in Minnesota have been basically the same for the past 20 years. This would allow for 6 years of increases of up to 50 cents per month per year in residential or business basic line phone service, at which time rates would continue to be regulated and cannot increase any faster than an inflationary index that's built into the bill. So in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman, that's what the bill does. It builds in the possibility of some modest rate increases and then caps the rate in future years. I believe that Representative Hoppe's bill would allow basic rates to continue to be regulated by the commission. Doesn't necessarily build in increases, but leaves those decisions to the commission.
Thank you. Mr. Stanek, any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Westrom. How about 911?
It would be the intention of Representative Beard's bill, similar to Representative Hoppe's, it would be the intention of the bills that the Minnesota Commission would continue to have jurisdiction over service quality issues. It would allow the agencies in Minnesota to have all their consumer protection provisions, and it would require companies to continue to make 911, TAP, TAM, and the other payments that are generally falling, Representative Erickson, under the heading of public safety and public purpose. It would not in any way try to impair those obligations of a company to pay those fees to the state.
Mr. Chair, perhaps Mr. Ellis could prepare a side-by-side for us before we deal with our omnibus bill. Would that be possible?
Well, Representative Erickson, I guess the first thing would be is whether Representative Beard's really going to get this put into an amendment to come forward on Tuesday.
I see. Well, if that, Mr. Ellis will know that. So,
Mr. Chair, we could tell him it failed.
We could do that.
But we shouldn't.
Well, Mr. Eloff, basically you're looking for some comparisons if some of these amendments are drafted. Is that possible, Mr. Eloff?
That's correct.
I'd be happy to do that for the committee.
Thank you.
You'll kind of know what amendments are coming, and I guess in general, if you could kind of compare some summaries for members once you've had requests for whatever is coming, that'd be helpful. Any other questions, members? Mr. Stanek, thanks for your brief testimony. Sorry for the rush, but we have to get through everything, at least to a thumbnail sketch.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
With that, Chair will lay over House File 1728. Next, Representative Walker is going to step in for Representative Goodwin on House File 2259. Representative Walker will move House File 2259 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus telecom bill. Representative Walker, your time is beginning.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Representative Goodwin, apologize for not having to be here. As everyone knows, it's a little crazy and trying to be in a couple places at once. This bill, House File 2259, came about for Representative Goodwin through a constituent who was in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and had three different phone cards. Went to use each one of them and could not utilize any one of them because they had expired. Out of the three, only one of them had small print in the back that talked about an expiration to the card. And this bill itself is a consumer protection to notify individuals of how long they're able to utilize the phone card.
Any questions, members?
Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson. I should have guessed.
I realize that this is under our purview, but does the state legislature control what private industry does in regard to preparation of, for example, phone cards?
Representative Walker.
I think we told Marshall Fields where to put their expiration date.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Erickson. Couldn't throw a soft one. Had to throw a difficult one at me.
Representative Walker, you don't have to answer this. We can have someone from the industry answer.
Thank you. If there is someone from the industry here that can answer it. I think the bigger thing for Representative Goodwin isn't necessarily where the expiration date is, but as more important that there is information to the consumer that once you do utilize the card that it doesn't last forever.
Okay.
So we'll represent Harrison to that. We do require notice on things from time to time, so I would guess that's what this bill is trying to achieve. But I'm curious, what does Marshall Fields sell that's got an expiration date on it?
Well, if you have an account card every once in a while.
Yes.
Maybe they're not applicable, but I know expiration on it.
Mr. Chair, they actually are. If you utilize your charge card the way that they like you to use, you get a day of 10% shopping for that day that there's an expiration date.
You must know from experience, Representative Walker.
I'm just saying I participate with the economy well.
Is there anybody in the audience that from the industry that...
And Mr. Chair?
Yes, Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have some oral amendments, too, after the industry speaks.
Okay. Representative Walker, on those, could have those just incorporated in the amendment that would come forward on Tuesday. Is that all right?
That's fine, Mr. Chair.
That's what we'll be doing to incorporate them. And I'm eating up the time, so Mr. DeBrice, welcome to the committee. Identify yourself for the record and tell us how much you like this bill.
Mr. Chairman, members, for the record, my name is Victor Belbrus, representing Sprint. Telephone calling cards that expire typically have the expiration date printed on the back of the card. Some do not have an expiration date because they are rechargeable. So those are two factors to consider. We have typically opposed any requirement to use a particular font size, for example, on the expiration date, because that creates difficulty in the production of the cards and takes up space that's needed for other information that has to be on them. So,
Mr. Chair,
Representative Walker,
thank you, Mr. Chair, for being able to respond to that. Even if a card, and actually this happened to me several times, even if a card is going to be rechargeable, that information isn't on the card. And so, you know, you put in a phone card in your wallet and then go out of town thinking that you have minutes on your card to call back home, and you get there and end up having to pay $20 for another phone card because it's just not working. And there isn't actually an explanation necessarily when you call every phone, depending on the company that you bought your phone card from, when you call that number.
Mr. DeBrice, couldn't you still publish on the card any minutes not used within 90 days or any minutes not used within 12 months will lapse, even if it's rechargeable? I mean, wouldn't they, don't cards usually have a policy that...
Mr. Chairman, the credit cards that Sprint issues don't time out in that fashion. If you have minutes left, you can use them until any published expiration date that's on there. One reason we do have an expiration date for some cards is because the way we accrue the revenues from those cards is tied to the actual usage or to the expiration date. We can't book the full value of the credit card sale until either all the minutes are used or until that expiration date takes place. For the cards that do have that, when the customer uses the card, they get an announcement when they attempt to use the card that tells them how many minutes they have left. At least that's true for Sprint cards. I can't speak to other carriers.
It doesn't say when it expires.
No.
And Representative Walker, you're eating into my time, but that's...
I'll take a couple of your minutes, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, to this point,
Representative Hopper,
as quick as I can, the top card, it says the minutes do not expire.
Right.
And the two top cards say see packaging for terms and conditions.
Exactly what I was saying.
And Mr. Chair...
Representative Walker.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Poppy, that's part of the amendment that will be coming on Tuesday.
I was just going to ask.
Representative Poppy, what?
Packaging has the directions.
When that's in the garbage 6 months later, what do you do?
I never throw anything out, Mr. Chair, so I don't know. I'll look forward to
it. Well, Mr. Dobris and Representative Walker, I assume you might be the one bringing the amendment if Representative Goodwin wants it brought forward. You perhaps try to talk and see if there's some agreeable language, and either way, we'll entertain that bill on Tuesday as well.
I will do that, Mr. Chair.
And you did, like everyone else, you have to get your language.
Chair, I have one question.
Representative Erickson, you're eating into my time dramatically now.
Oh, I don't mind getting into your time.
Go on, Representative Erickson.
I'm just wondering if a customer can use the 800 number or the toll-free number listed on here. Can that be used to find out, I realize it's customer service, but how many minutes you have left or the expiration date, is that a consumer-friendly?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Barrison, I don't know the answer to that question.
Perhaps, sir, you could find that out for us by the time we do this.
Does that work, Mr. Dobris?
Yes, Mr. Chairman.
Great.
Thank you.
With that, the chair will lay over House File 2259. Next, I'm just going to briefly talk about, actually I want the department to come up here, so whoever wants to talk about 1580, just for 30 seconds or 42 seconds at the max. Basically, it's a per-line charge bill that would change how we collect fees on our phone systems, our phone numbers in Minnesota. Mr. Garvey, please identify yourself and why don't you tell us a little bit more about this bill that I'm carrying for you.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Edward Garvey, Deputy Commissioner, Department of Commerce. House file 1580 is, as the chairman indicated, is a per number fee bill. It's an effort to take the way we fund 911, the Telephone Access Minnesota, the TAM program, and the TAP program, which is a telephone assistance program, which is a program for the financially needy, and fund them on a per number basis rather than on an access line basis. Access lines are diminishing under the new technologies, particularly voice over IP comes into play. House file 1580 also would include and roll in regulatory costs into that per number charge fee. This is one of the provisions that was dramatically changed and appropriately so as part of the Senate negotiations. We've now taken the regulatory fees out of the per number charge and amended the way we collect regulatory costs to make it more simple from our side and more simple from the industry's perspective. Mr. Chairman, that concludes what needs to get said on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Garvey. As I understand it, it's a revenue neutral change, isn't it?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, the bill was drafted to be explicitly revenue neutral, to be able to sort of say that it is not our intention to make this a new or increased revenue source.
Mm-hmm.
However, because the funding sources themselves for 911, TAM, and TAP may fluctuate depending upon their individual annual costs, we've allowed for that fluctuation to occur as part of the Senate bill. But the House file 1580 explicitly is revenue neutral to the current fiscal year, but I think that was knowingly and appropriately been changed.
Okay, with that, actually the chair will move House file 1580 be laid on the table for possible inclusion in the omnibus telecom bill. With that, the chair lays it on the table. Any questions? Otherwise, members, we need to wrap up here for session. Thank you, Mr. Garvey. We will work on that more by next Tuesday, and it's also in part of the language that Senate has. Members, what I would like to do without objection is just bring up 1579, vote to put on the DE1 amendment that's in your packages.
Mm-hmm.
We will do nothing more with that other than simply put it on there so House staff has an engrossed version that they can draft amendments for. If that's acceptable, is there any problems with that? It's the Senate language in the DE1 amendment, and I would suspect some of that could come out or be enhanced or added or changed on Tuesday, but this would give revisers a chance to engross it, and Mr. Eloff would then have a current vehicle with language to draft off of. So it's really just a systematic approach to trying to make it as easy as possible on our staff. But without objection, the chair will will bring up House File 1579, and members, I will lay this on the table right after this. So for a passage and be referred to the General Register, the chair will then move the DE1 amendment to House File 1579. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. Motion carries. DE1 amendment is adopted. The chair will lay House File 1579 on the table. That's it. With that, members, thank you for your cooperation. We didn't get to Article 4, Representative Beard's bill on the list. We will start with that right away next time and then go from there with putting the omnibus bill together. So good work. We won't need to meet tonight, Representative Atkins. He's gone. Meeting adjourned.